RCR with Paul Brennan, Reality Check Radio.
So over the last 5 weeks here at RCR on a Monday morning, we have had a series called What is Money? And Joel Robinson from Radical Investment Wellington has been with us over those five episodes, starting with, well, the very start of money, all the way through to a two-part discussion. We had part one last Monday on Bitcoin. And so we're up to episode six, part two of the Bitcoin discussion now with What is Money? Hi, Joel. Thanks for coming back.
Thanks, Paul. Yep, we're we're nearing the end here. Although, is there ever really an end when you're talking about money? It just goes on.
That's another series, the end of money. I doubt it. There'll always be something.
If you want a series that never ends, then that's a really good one.
Yeah. I wonder if there are any other species that trade things sort of like money to get advantage. Like squirrels will give up a few nuts, you know, if you give me something like that. It probably happens a bit in nature. Anyway, so last week we sort of climbed into Bitcoin. I found out about the mining from you of what it takes to mine it. It ticks most of the boxes of what makes a currency. Well, first of all, a currency, but durable. So if people have been listening, they'll be across that. So we're up to part two of the discussion. And where do you want to start on this? I see at the top of my list of words from you, verification. Verification.
Yeah. So we did talk quite a bit about it in, actually 2 weeks ago, a nice break for a long weekend. But
that's right.
Yeah. About how some of that works. But there's quite a bit to it. And there were some other parts there that I'd said, oh, we'll get to that. And we didn't actually get time to get to that. So I wanted to cover that
now
before.
Is the time. Yep.
Before we dive into at the end, just some of the common questions that people tend to have or the doubts, I guess, they have around Bitcoin. But yeah, we talked about verification and how that works. And I guess the kind of phrase that sums up Bitcoin or the belief of Bitcoin is that it's a network that requires zero trust but high verification. It's kind of the premise that every transaction is essentially verified by the entire network, and there's no trust needed necessarily because it's peer-to-peer transactions. There's no counterparty. There's no middleman, so to speak, where in the traditional finance system you have that. And we talked a little bit about the mining process and how it's mathematical and computers are, you know, solving equations, competing to solve them. What we didn't talk about is on the verification side of things, it's actually really quick and cheap for nodes, that's the computers in the network, to actually verify that a transaction is correct, is valid. And I guess the best analogy I can give of that is if someone asks you a riddle, you might, unless you've heard the riddle before, it might take you a while to try and think through the answer to that riddle. But when you know the answer to the riddle, it's very quick to work out that that's the answer because it's like, oh, it makes a lot of sense. And so it's a similar kind of idea. I'm really, really, you know, dumbing it down here, simplifying it. But that's the gist of how the system is designed to work. And when you've got verification being really, really cheap and easy, for one bad actor to try and verify something fraudulent is near impossible. And then when it comes to all the effort required in the mining, so to create like a fraudulent transaction, that's where all of the real hard work and spend is, because that's where the major reward is. So the way that the incentives are designed, pre-programmed into Bitcoin, are just ingenious for the continuation, the growth, the success of the whole network. And in such a way that it kind of plays on the way that people are wired, being somewhat greedy and kind of in some ways using that against us in a good way of actually having incentives to essentially be honest or act in the interests of the whole network.
That's pretty cool, actually. As you've been describing Bitcoin to me and our listeners, I don't know about listeners, but certainly me, have had this feeling that whoever came up with this was, well, a big thinker is not even that's too small, you know. The community or whoever it was, I don't know. But, you know, it's so well thought out, it seems to me.
Yeah. Well, it is like a an iteration of many kind of failed past attempts where there were elements of it that were essentially like Bitcoin, but that didn't work properly, or there wasn't the technology. And even just you think about the internet connectivity is hugely important for Bitcoin to be able to work. Yeah. And well, we didn't really have that successfully until what, the 90s? And even then it was, you know, pretty slow.
Pretty slow, yeah.
Not a huge amount of processing power. You know, and so really we've only had the technology to kind of do something like this for about the last 20 odd years. So, you know, but if there weren't those sort of failed past attempts, I guess it wouldn't be the learnings that would have you know, come to essentially spawn Bitcoin. It wouldn't be here if there hadn't been those failed attempts.
I've got a good verification story for you. Okay,
go
just
for
real
it.
Quick. So I visited the U.S. Air Force graveyard in Tucson, Arizona, a couple of times, but a while back, and it's 2,000 acres, and it's just full of all the inventory of the Air Force that's not flying. Some of it's been demolished or parted out, but substantially, you know, things can be brought back into life. There's this one part where there are a whole lot of old B-52 bombers, and they've all been taken apart exactly the same, 90 of them. And I asked the guy, I said, because you could just run the digger or the metal cruncher through them. I said, how come they're all done like this? And he said, well, when the US and Soviet Union entered into a nuclear arms limitation deal, part of it was the number of strategic nuclear bombers that were operational to, you know, go and nuke whatever country. So they had to take X amount of these out of service as a percentage of the fleet. And because verification was necessary, they had to lay them out in this field in a certain configuration. So when the Russian satellites passed over, they could see that these things were taken apart to the point that they'd never fly again, and therefore verify. And the Soviets did the same for the Americans.
Wow, so fascinating. That's I've never heard that before.
Verification.
Yeah.
Trust, I think Reagan said, trust through verification.
That's kind of the premise of Bitcoin, really. Like, and yeah, it's very true. You know, if there is high transparency, high verification, actually breeds trust. You know, trust doesn't need to be earned
assumed
or given, really.
It's binary.
It comes as a result.
Yeah.
Yeah. So,
okay.
As we've had this growth of Bitcoin, and we talked about the, you know, the increase in price, which last week, by the way, we touched against the all-time high price and about the $73,000 mark US. So as we've had this price rise over time, the amount of energy that's been going into the operation, the maintenance, the mining, the whole network essentially has been increasing. And that's what this term you may have come across, listeners may have come across, which is the hash rate, which is a measure of the number of hashes, which is essentially the number of calculations done, and it's usually measured like daily or per minute or per second, and has been climbing constantly since the century inauguration of Bitcoin. And the beauty is the higher and higher the value, obviously the more and more processing power gets committed to it, means essentially as a result, the more and more secure the network is. Because in order for it to be attacked, there needs to be essentially a majority of the power that is put into, or energy put into the mining, needs to be sort of in concert fraudulent. That's one of the concerns that people have, which I'll get to. But one of the other interesting myths I've come across is that so many in the media seem to report that a lot of, you know, about this, the amount of power used in the Bitcoin network. And I remember about 4 years ago, I think it was, when it was the Bitcoin had reached the previous peak, or it might be 2021. There was a lot of focus in the media about Bitcoin using as much power as, I think, might have been Argentina at the time, or it was, you know, it would have been like the 30th largest country in terms of power usage or something like that. And all of this, you know, negativity about that because of supposed, you know, environmental impact of that. But the really interesting thing is that there's a lot of, it's quite a there's some quite misleading statements around the power usage, because so much of the power usage is power that otherwise would just dumped, be wasted.
Yeah,
if you're in a developing nation and you're wanting to build a dam, you're not going to be able to connect every single house.
Yeah, you might as well use the what's generated, excess or whatever, a quantum of it for something like this, if you can.
Exactly. I mean, what else are they going to do with it? Because, you know, battery storage, they might be able to store some, but, you know, you can't just turn off the dam so the batteries get filled up. Then, you know, if they're not discharged and used, then you have some destabilized power storage, which has some really severe consequences. So the only other alternative really is just dumping it. So which is the more environmentally sound? Is it just wasting electricity that's being produced?
Good question.
Or essentially putting it into a store of value.
We could look at ourselves for that, because, you know, I think it's Manapouri in the south powers the Rio Tinto aluminium smelter, which uses, I think, a ridiculous amount of electricity.
Yep.
Maybe unplug that cable and plug it into something that can power this sort of production, and we may all be better off.
Well, it's a really fascinating one. I mean, I remember from, because it was in the news, especially a few years ago, it seems to kind of periodically be in the news really, but where Rio Tinto is trying to sort of renegotiate the price that they're getting for, you know, the power for that smelter, and, oh, we're not making, you know, money, it's too expensive. I'd be fascinated to see what, you know, the generator is getting in terms of their deal there for that power versus, you know, what they could have gotten had it instead been used to.
Well, they could make their own Bitcoins, couldn't they?
If you're a power company, you've got your
own plant and machinery to get into the bizzo yourself.
Well, there's a really high chance that a lot of power companies around the world are going to become more actually Bitcoin mining companies. And a lot of the Bitcoin miners in the States in particular, there's a few of them listed on the market. Marathon Digital is a really well-known one. There's quite a few, though. That's only one of them. And they have built out a lot of power generation themselves, but they also, you know, have signed contracts with various different, you know, generators to create that power. So, yeah, I mean, it's totally plausible that in New Zealand, it is one really good solution for the fact that renewable has some downfalls, and that, you know, you can't just necessarily switch it on whenever you need, and a lot of the generation happens only at fixed times, and so it doesn't have that, you know, stability of power supply. And so one of the benefits can be you can effectively store power in a sense, or store the wealth from power in something like Bitcoin that can then be used to sort of rebuy power back at the off-peak times. And this is, I guess, in a sense, what's going on in a place. I read a really fascinating story in Rwanda about a dam that was built there, and built a dam and all the excess power, because they can only use about 10% of what this dam's generating. They've built it with the future in mind. It's going into mining Bitcoin. But, you know, there's much bigger operations underway, like Bhutan. The Kingdom of Bhutan has been confirmed as, I think, the third largest government holder of Bitcoin, from memory.
Gosh. Way up there in the Himalayas.
Yeah, they're mining from hydro.
Oh, wow. Well, of course they would there, probably. Yeah.
Yeah. And they've passed El Salvador, which is famously the first country to adopt Bitcoin as legal tender.
Yeah.
And El Salvador themselves are mining through, I believe it's volcanic, or what's that, geothermal?
Geothermal power.
Mining, right. Which... obviously, New Zealand could potentially take a leaf there. We've got the capability.
Why are they sitting around? Why are they sitting around? Yeah. How come it's up to us to come up with all these ideas?
Well, I think that those that work in the power industry often somewhat conservative.
Yeah.
Bitcoin's seen as a bit too left field, a bit too radical. But that view of it being radical is changing every week, really. Every
month. Look into it immediately, Joel. I'd be onto it now.
Well, they should be. I mean, whoever is, in their business development side of things really should be. I mean, you know, at the top, they should really be having a serious consideration of it. And it wouldn't surprise me if some actually are, to be honest.
Yep.
Haven't, kick-started it for whatever reason. But if we're not in New Zealand, then I can tell you for sure there's plenty of assessment being done in other countries and US. And it wouldn't surprise me. I mean, it'd be interesting to see what happens out of the US election, but it wouldn't surprise me if Trump gets elected and there's a huge lot of change in this area, as there's potentially some more Bitcoin-friendly policy that comes into play.
It's a fascinating time from that point of view, isn't it? In the next few days, you got a feeling literally anything could happen. But he's pledged allegiance to Bitcoin, hasn't he, or cryptocurrency anyway?
Crypto in general, yeah. And there is a bit of a difference between crypto and Bitcoin, and there's differences in the in this community. You've got the staunch Bitcoiners and those that are kind of looking more broadly. But I think what is really commonly agreed is that anything that's pro crypto is pro Bitcoin as an extension. So they've got policies that they've put around that, while the Democrats have kind of more just been a bit vague in what they're promising.
I think he was going for the libertarian vote there. That was the libertarians he was talking to there. Okay, in the time we have left, which is just a little under 10 minutes, what else do we want to say about Bitcoin in part two of talking about it?
Yes, I think talking through some of these potential issues that people have seen or that has been commonly talked about with Bitcoin, because, you know, it's not a given. Some have a view that it's a given that Bitcoin will be the future of money and it will supplant fiat. For me personally, I'm leaning more on the side that it will, but I don't think it's with absolute certainty. And the various different issues, there's a few, and over time, arguably, they become less and less. But one of them I talked about earlier was what's known as a 51% attack. 51% being having, you know, majority of the hash rate, or the power essentially that's going into the mining of Bitcoin. And if 51% of the network acted in concert to fraudulently create blocks, then it would undermine most likely people's trust in the network, and that could be something that would cause it to fail. There is a belief, I think, from some that is easier to achieve than in reality. I think it is, when you look at the amount of power that's going in. There's a huge amount of power. And even were, because sometimes it's looked at, would it be possible for that to happen alongside something else, like a decent portion of the network going down? And I think that's really the only plausible. You'd have to have this combination of those factors of
very unlikely, obviously, incredibly unlikely, probably billions to one. But you know what happens?
Yeah,
things can happen. Yeah,
and the example of that's often talked about is China banned it, or supposedly they banned it. In reality, China is actually, well, originating in China, is actually the most Bitcoin mining of anywhere in the world.
Why am I not surprised to hear that? Yeah.
I mean, it's pretty hard to hide geographically where mining is coming from, because the Bitcoin network is so transparent. I think it's just pretty obvious to most people that it's the government that's having, you know, more involvement there than individuals, or if they're individuals, they are, you know, managing to hide themselves pretty well. But it's pretty easy to find information as to where a lot of this
They might be doing
from.
It on a VPN, Joel. They might be on a VPN.
They could be. I mean,
mining it through the VPN. Yeah, who knows?
Maybe there's probably, I mean, there's people that understand computer networks a lot better than myself, a lot more advanced than myself, that I think would perhaps think that some of that's pretty difficult. I mean, the thing is, there's huge draw on power where if you've got large mining operations, so you know that would be the thing that would essentially most likely give it away.
You need a hydro dam next to the mining operation, basically, don't you?
Yeah. I mean, you can definitely get away with less than that, but you know, you'd have to have some pretty smart people, and there could very well be. But yeah, so they're heavily mining it. But when the government announced it, a ban on that for individuals to be able to mine there, we saw the hash rate, or the amount of power, drop quite substantially in a short period of time. But in about space of about 5-6 months, it recovered to back where it was again. So that recovery actually was driven by places outside of China.
Yeah, I was thinking that, yep.
But, you know, if you had something like that, like a sudden change where the US and China and any of the other major countries mining it suddenly dropped off from working in concert, struggle to see the US and China working in concert together, but who knows. And then at the same time, there was a huge amount of power that was put in from entities acting in concert to
be obvious.
Approve fraudulent transactions, then, you know, that could...
Well, the US and China got together over a certain virus, so, you know, yep. They do that from time to time. All right. Anything else to finish up on?
Yeah, so some of the other potential issues could be if there's, you know, perceived to be a better alternative out there. And this is often one that gets, I think, mistakenly viewed by a lot of the crypto community. So there's this view, you know, Bitcoin was kind of the first. It's more basic technology. The file size or the size of each block in terms of it's like 1 megabyte, which is not very large. And so there's others out there that are, you know, 8 megabytes or larger.
Right. Yeah.
But the issue with so many of these others is that they have been either created by an individual, so there's some element of trust required,
yep.
Or that rate of creation is higher than Bitcoin's 0.87% per annum at the moment. And so the trouble is people get a bit too fixated on what is technologically most advanced rather than what actually makes good money. But there is, you know, always the potential for some alternative cryptocurrency or other currency to supplant it. But right now,
that would only be if Bitcoin was failing, wouldn't it?
Yeah, potentially. But I mean, you can make an argument that if we had a gold standard all the way through and nothing had ever changed, I mean, you know, there might not have been reason to invent Bitcoin because it definitely was spawned out of the GFC. But at some point, you know, a harder currency would have come along than gold, and so it could have been Bitcoin. And it's not that gold is a poor currency.
Yeah.
It's just that as technology changes, the definition of what is good currency changes as well. So, I mean, it's plausible that it could be something that's better, perceived to be better. It's always hard to imagine what that could be when there is
something you can just think something. Of, and it, suddenly you've got money in your bank. I don't know.
Well, that doesn't really meet the standards for good money, because then you'd have an infinite supply.
Yeah, that means absolutely zero of any of the standards.
Yeah. So other issues includes anything that could undermine people's faith in Bitcoin. So it could be any of the aforementioned things or something else that we're not even thinking of. Could be due to the amount of energy that's needed to essentially effectively maintain the network. You know, there is going to be a lot more power generation that's going to need to be built out over time if Bitcoin continues to scale. I mean, we've got technology improving things, but, you know, it's still the amount of power being used is still increasing. So that's one other potential factor. Another is quantum computing often gets talked about. I mean, in reality, the likelihood of that undermining it is, you know, the people that are going to discover quantum computing is not going to be, you know, someone working in their mum's basement. It's going to be a large company, and it's going to be probably many companies at a similar space and time. So while someone that could use quantum computing to try and attack the Bitcoin network, you probably see at almost the same time people using quantum computing to be mining Bitcoin. And so it kind of nullifies the potential impact.
The potential mining is, from what I understand, quantum computers would be a lot faster, wouldn't it? Because it can do everything all at once. But then that would devalue the currency, wouldn't it? If you could do that.
No, because if suddenly you had a whole bunch of people mining it using quantum computing, because of the inbuilt difficulty adjustment that Bitcoin has, part of the ingenious design, every 2 weeks it's adjusting the difficulty of the equations, it would just essentially crank up their difficulty. So
it just carries on going up in degree of difficulty to the the sort of the challenge to it.
Exactly. So that you're still getting that block every 10 minutes. You'd have a period of about 2 weeks where that supply probably jumped quite significantly, but it would only be for that period. And then it would, you know, then it would just get that much harder. And so it would be quite obvious, I guess, when someone was first using quantum computing. It'd
be a huge spike.
Yeah, most likely.
All right, we're almost out of time, Joel. One or two more, and then I think we'll tell folk about their opportunity to ask questions, Q&A, et cetera, maybe next week. So let's finish up now.
Yep.
Any last points before we're done?
Yeah, so I think probably the last potential issue for people to stew on, and I do hear it a bit, but is, you know, we're basically all computers worldwide not able to communicate with each other due to some, I don't know, attack on connectivity, or I don't know, it would have to be pretty incredibly
alien invasion.
Well, either that or some sort of attack on communications in concert. Yep. But it would be really tough to pull that off, and tougher every year as we get satellite connectivity and the like. So I think, the every year, the more that Bitcoin grows, the more adoption there is, and we're starting to see that in various ways, which we can talk to a bit perhaps next week as well. But the lower and lower each risk gets.
All right. So last week I asked anyone if they had questions related to what is money that they wanted to ask you to send some in. We've got a few, and let's put that out one more time right now. And that covers six episodes now. And if you are unfamiliar with the others, you can go back and listen to them on the replays from our website and app. And let's see if we can get through a few of those, maybe in a bit of a shorter session next Monday, Joel. Until then, though, it's been fascinating. Thank you so much for contributing. Well, you're the man.
Thanks, Paul.
For bringing us this series. It's been really interesting. I've learned a lot, and so have our listeners. I know that. And I sort of see the arc now of money, the big arc, the arc of history of money. It's really fascinating. So thank you.
Thank you, Paul. No, it's been a pleasure to go through it. And, I'll be probably bridging some of this into potentially your money talks series as well.
That's fantastic. All right. We'll talk again this time, almost anyway. Won't be to the minute, but it'll be close next Monday. Thank you, Joel.
Thanks, Paul. Appreciate it.
The RCR shop has great gift ideas, from great-looking tees, hoodies, caps, tote bags, bumper stickers, and more. The RCR shop is now open at www.realitycheck.radio/shop.